If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday. I'm your host. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. This is where you tune in to get your dose of local news, and we touch on some state issues, which we will today also just a little bit, but we're chock full of local news. Children's Services Council meeting going on, I think, right now. They've got the search committee will be meeting, and then the full 10-member CSC will meet. We're going to spend the next segment talking about the search for the executive director and how that it's wobbling right now, the process. We've got a story up at Talos Reports about the beginning of the process and how they've used anonymous scoring. And in other words, we've got this, a referendum approved organization that's going to tax you for $8 to $10 million a year. And nobody wants to tell you how they're grading the candidates that will run this organization. I don't know how this slipped by us. I know that we've paid a little bit of attention to the CSC as they tried to develop the foundation for this organization that was approved, like I said, by a referendum. And anyway, I'll get into the details of this. As you don't need to look any further than the selection of the executive director for the ethics board back in 2015, 2014 to see how important it is to get this position right. And right now it looks like this, there's an opportunity for this to go political really quick. And we'll get into that in the next segment. At the bottom of the hour, the city of Tallahassee meeting agenda is out for next Wednesday. I'm not shocked, but frustrated. The abortion resolution language is back included in the meeting. So we've got a nonpartisan city commission has found the need to basically detail a resolution in support of abortion with no reference to, what other people would like to see happen in terms of adoption or some description about maybe the mental health aspect of having an abortion. It's nothing. It's just again, as I said previously, it's just a shot at, 40% of the people in this community who think other than what this resolution says. And, I'll have the mayor on Tuesday. Supposed to have the mayor on Tuesday if I don't upset him between now and then, which I could in this hour because his wife would like to show here in the next segment. So anyway, he's supposed to be on Tuesday. We'll go through this with him. I just, for the life of me, don't understand why we can't find five people that are more interested in priorities here local than trying to just, take positions on issues that are going to divide us. With no real consequence locally. I mean, they have no authority over abortion. And so I'll go over some of the other issues on the city agenda, and we'll discuss that a little bit further. The last segment, we'll touch on Leon Schools. They also have their agenda out for their Tuesday meeting. And just a couple of items there. And we've said this before, don't want to continue to harp on it, but their presentations of the issues they're going to cover is nowhere near as substantive as what is found with Leon County and the city of Tallahassee. But we'll run through a couple of items that are on the agenda. A huge development out by Childs High School is on the agenda for some impact analysis. I say there's no impact, but I see negative numbers everywhere, so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the federal lawsuit that was filed on Monday. Just, we talked a little bit about this on Tuesday. It was, I got word of the lawsuit just before we went on the air on Tuesday. I had a little bit more of an opportunity to digest it. And so we'll go over that again and some of the things that are in the lawsuit, some of the allegations, which I think really lead to it really leads to this conclusion that there are a lot of policies or a lot of actions that are being taken that aren't really being set or approved by people that we elected. I think that's interesting because it's almost like going behind the backs of elected officials and governing. Now, That doesn't mean if the elected officials find out about it, they're going to stand up and say something. It may be that they're okay with it, because that means they don't have to deal with it. And until it's brought to their attention, well, we're going to bring it to their attention, and then we'll see how, you know, if they address it at all. But anyway, we'll talk about schools in the last segment. Enough there to get you up to date on. And then getting out of this segment, wanted to focus on some breaking news, statewide news this morning, is that Governor DeSantis calls for lawmakers to end COVID vaccine mandates in Florida. So today he's calling for a special legislative session to ban local vaccine mandates in Florida. The announcement came at a press conference with Surgeon General Joseph Latipo and Attorney General Ashley Moody in Clearwater, where they were there to announce the need to take action to protect Florida jobs. Federal government, this is from DeSantis, federal government is using a, quote, heavy hand to force these injections on a lot of folks who believe that decision should be theirs. The Republican governor also said the state government is taking aggressive legal action to stop mandatory vaccinations, but added that legislative action is required, thus the call for a separate special session. The regular 2022 legislation is set to begin in January, and the committees have already started meeting. But after DeSantis announced he would ask the legislature to come back for a special session, so I guess they're going to have to do this. You know, they have not received the dates, but it'll have to be pretty quick. And obviously, this is the issue dealing with the impact of the vaccine mandate on people who have jobs and don't want to take it. Now, there's some national stories. You know, Delta Airlines withdrew from their mandate, their ultimatum of getting a mandate or lose your job. I know there are a couple other companies that the deadline is quickly approaching, November 1st. And there's some major concerns about how it's going to impact their workforce. You know, the other thing to remember is that this mandate is not an official rule of OSHA. From what I understand, is it's going to take OSHA a good year or so to implement a legitimate rule on requiring this for companies that have over 100 employees. And so what's happening here now is just it's businesses that are acting on their own, and so they can make these decisions without any kind of legal ramification, like Delta, who decided not to move forward with it. They don't face any legal ramifications from the federal government because there's not a rule in place. So, you know, what's happening now is there are some companies, I guess, in Florida that feel obligated to do this for whatever reason. And so, you know, we saw in Gainesville, the city of Gainesville had this mandate in place, and a judge put an injunction in place for some with some logical questions, and then the city just backed down. So that's going to be an interesting issue. It'll be interesting to see when the session is called, and then what is required to be passed, and then how it's implemented, because that is the key implementation of any law like this. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot to the Children's Services Council and their search process for an executive director. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. As I said before, we're going to talk about the Children's Services Council. And just a little background, I think most people are aware that this was approved by a referendum. They've already beginning to assess the property tax. They can raise about $8 to $10 million on from property owned in Leon County, and they're going to devote that to Children's Services. We haven't got the need process or the need assessment yet. Don't know if we'll get one. That's one of the original debates of this. But they put together the 10-member board, and now they are in the process of selecting an executive director. Now, you need to only go back to the Independent Ethics Board, which was another referendum-approved organization, which was designed to help out with ethics. because we felt like we needed that. And looks like, you know, based on some of the things that we've seen lately in the last few months, that we were right on that. But the selection of the executive director of the ethics board was a political disaster. And it was a disaster from the beginning. It involved elected officials who didn't want the independent ethics board. And we lived through a dysfunctional process for a number of years because of that selection. There's no doubt it held back the work of the ethics board to this day. I think there's probably still an impact. Now, I tell you that to tell you this, that it is important to get the first hire of a new organization correct. And we have not paid too much attention to the workings of the CAC. We announced, you know, we covered when they have appointed the 10-member board, and they've gone on and done, they've created bylaws, have hired some people to help them get a process in place. And, so there's been, I would say, rigorous debate. They've advertised the job for the executive director. And this is sort of where we want to step in and start reporting. Probably should have got involved with it a little bit earlier. But what they've done is, you know, they were set to go ahead and interview the three final candidates. And before we get to the three final candidates, there was obviously, I think, over 100 applications. They whittled that down. And then from what I understand, there was an interview process where basically there were set questions that were asked. Not free-willing questions from the search committee, which was made up of five members. I'm going to go ahead and name the five search committee members who are charged with making recommendations to the full 10-member Children's Services Council. And they are Jonathan Sostrom, who is the chief judge and the chair, Carmen Adams Connor, who's the principal at Pineview, Carolyn D. Cummings, who's the Leon County Commissioner, Paul Mitchell, who's a lobbyist with Southern Strategies, and Mark O'Brien, who is the CEO of Talis Memorial Hospital. So those five were charged with evaluating, grading, it was five candidates that they interviewed. And they were charged with grading them over six categories, and the grading was from a zero to five. So the maximum score was 150 points for each individual. The problem is that the scoring was anonymous on these five candidates. And so what they did is they used this anonymous scoring to whittle out two, and they decided to interview the top three candidates, and there were some point breakdowns. The head guy, or the person that led with 140 out of 150 points, was Chris Latsos. He had 140 points. The next two, the second and third candidates, had 118 and 119 respectively. And that was Kelly Oddy and a lady named Sika Rose Green. So those were the three they were set to interview. Now, these were going to be more of a freewheeling interview session, because obviously you're getting down to the brass tacks of who you're going to hire. But what has happened is two of the three have withdrawn, and we're left with one candidate remaining, and that is Sika Rose Green. Obviously, now that she's the only one remaining, she's the focus of, you know, she's going to be the most impacted by the next decision that's made. And so, but before we get to that, because the CSC is meeting today to deal with that, I have got the interview scoring of the five candidates that resulted in the selection of the three to interview. And that's when I found out it was anonymous. I talked to some officials at the CSC. They said, look, this is a standard process. This is an approved methodology. They gave it a title, Objective Selection Process. And this is basically results in the five search committee members giving a score from one to five, but it's anonymous. You don't know what search committee member assigned what grade to what candidate. And so we started looking at this, and there's a troubling trend that shows that one candidate, Sika Rose Green, was basically chosen as the favorite by two committee members over the overwhelming favorite of Chris Latsos. And so that raises a little bit of a cautionary flag, because you've got somebody that is the overwhelming, consistent favorite of the committee, but you find two of the five members voted for someone else over that person. I would like to know who those two committee members are so that we could ask some questions, because their experiences, the experience, the work experience between the gentleman who was the highest scorer and Sika Rose Green is pretty stark. And so the problem with this is, if you're the media and you look at these scores and you would like to maybe delve into what these committee members were thinking, you want to delve into it even more now since the other two have bailed out. But we're not allowed to do that because you don't know who the scorers are. You know what? For example, the one that got the overwhelming number of points from the committee, Mr. Letsos, 140 out of 150, two of the committee members voted him lower, and one of the committee members gave Sika Rose Green a perfect score of 30 points. Again, that warrants questions. Now, we can't do that. I've asked about getting the names. We'll have to see if that happens. But more importantly now is the meeting going on right now. The CSC search committee, the five-member board, is meeting to make a recommendation to the CSC, the 10-member board, which will meet at like 2 o'clock today. And the options are, you know, are interesting, to say the least. First, you know, what they could do is they could add two other candidates to the list and go ahead and move forward with the three interviews to make sure that they get the right candidate. They could just interview the one candidate that is left, flush out if there's any major issues there, and then decide either to hire that person or start over. Or lastly, they could just go ahead and hire the one that is left standing without even doing an interview. Obviously, I think that would be the worst option for obvious reasons. I mean, you really have not even had a freewheeling interview with any of these candidates yet. So it will be, now from what I understand, there's quite a bit of lobbying going on behind the scenes. The Sika Rose Green is a candidate that is known locally. She worked on the Andrew Gillum campaign. She's been a part of P&P Communications. She has a communications background, not compared to some of the other members in the sense of an executive background of managing budgets of this size for any length of time. So that would be the critical side of that. But so we'll see how this process goes. The other thing I will tell you, and I want to mention here before we get out of this segment, is that the mayor's wife, Virginia Daly, has weighed in on this, and she is listed as a reference for Sika Green Rose, which, look, you can decide if this is an appropriate use of Miss Daly's name. Obviously, you know, you would the mayor would argue that she is a lawyer and has her own views on things, and she can take positions on whatever she wants. Someone else would argue that, well, wait a minute, with becoming elected a leadership mayor, there may be some parameters needed to put on exactly where the Daly family weighs in on some things. But anyway, the matter of the fact is that she has weighed in on this. And so that makes it even a little bit more political in a way. And so anyway, we will have some resolution on the questions I just posed by the end of the day, and we'll get you up to date on it Tuesday and what direction they will head. It should be interesting to follow. And anyway, that's all we'll say on that. And when we get back, we will pull up the City Commission meeting agenda and go over some three or four pertinent items there so that you can become more informed than anyone else you know about what's going on locally. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hey, what you want,
All right, welcome back to the second half of Thursday's edition of Above the Fold. we pivot to the city commission, which will have a meeting on Wednesday. And again, I'm scheduled to have Mayor John Daly in on Tuesday. And, you know, I warned his aide that I am a little more frustrated and down on things than I was the last time I talked to him. So be ready to answer some tough questions. And we'll get the softballs out of the way, and then we'll dig into an interview. So hopefully he's still on for Tuesday. I'll verify that. But that is that's the way it is right now, scheduled to have Mayor John Daly on. You know, we last spoke to City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow, and I thought we asked him some tough questions, and so we'll try to do the same with Mayor Daly. On the City Commission agenda, before we get to some specifics there, you know, wanted to just comment on this, the ethics issues that we're trying to deal with here. I went and looked at some of the meeting or listened to some of the meetings, city commission meetings, and the end of the city commission meetings, they have this place where it's discussion among members, and it's, you know, the commission split a little bit, and there's a lot of back and forth. And I am, you know, it's unbelievable to me that we are not as far along with trying to get some of these ethics rules in place, given, you know, what's happened with the corruption investigation and the amount of time that has just passed. I know that Dr. Erwin Jackson is back in the swing of things, going up to the meetings and taking advantage of his 3 minutes to try to get some common sense ethic reforms regarding, you know, lobbyists and public relations people who, you know, the reason why I mentioned public relations is because these people are, if you go look at the trial, the corruption trial, they seem to be the ones that want to call themselves consultants but end up lobbying. They call themselves consultants. They end up campaign managers. They call themselves consultants. They end up vendors with the local government. And so Dr. Jackson, again, is trying to carry the water here and trying to keep this issue in front of elected officials. But the city, it just seems like there's always a reason. And I look at this agenda and I see nothing on here about moving forward with any kind of ethics changes to the definition of a lobbyist. And I know there was back and forth between the Independent Ethics Board. So, look, something we can ask the mayor about on Tuesday, but, you know, just frustrating that it hasn't moved further along than we are now. Now, the city agenda, just going over a couple things. They're going to get an annual report from the Independent Ethics Board, which is just boilerplate stuff, so I'm not going to go over that. But they, there's going to be an appointment to the Citizens Police Review Board. And, looks like a Mr. Patrick O'Brien is going to try to fill the vacancy. Is going to be appointed by the mayor to fill the vacancy, left by Mr. Napier, Tom Napier, who resigned. Now, if you remember, if you go back and talk about this a little bit, that, the Police Review Board was established in September after sort of the social justice issues over the summer came up. And the purpose of the committee is to, you know, encourage transparency, enhance communications, and ensure a relationship of trust between Tallahassee Police Department and the community by creating sort of a panel of citizens to review different things within the police department. Now, a couple people have resigned from this, saying that it's a waste of time. They don't have any authority. And the board has 9 members, I believe. And so Mr. O'Brien's going to fill one of these positions. And we really, again, the only noteworthy thing to come out of here is that the concern that is really, you know, is not really serving any purpose. So we'll keep an eye on that, see if there's any discussion at the meeting. We'll have a reporter covering that. The other issue here is something I talked about earlier, which is very frustrating, disturbing. If I can think of another word, is the approval, the recommendation for the approval of a resolution supporting reproductive health care, which is basically a resolution dealing with abortion. And you know, this was on the agenda a couple of, I guess probably almost a month ago. There was a little bit of an outrage. Don't know if that was the reason why it was pulled. I know that I talked to a couple of people about, look, you know, why do we have to engage in this type of a resolution on an issue that's the most divisive, one of the, if not the most divisive issue in the history of the United States? Why does the city commission, who has no authority over this, have to bring this up in a community where, you know, 30 to 40% of the people which is, you know, a healthy chunk of people, you're just going to offend. And I'm not so it was removed from the agenda. And then I saw this come up on this week's agenda coming up, and I was thinking maybe they changed the language. Now, if they have, you know, I can't really, I don't see any change that looks to be softening anything. The only reference to adoption is the final line that says adopted by the city commission, which they're talking about the resolution. And so it just basically goes through, doesn't, and just glorifies abortion by nonpartisan elected officials. I don't know how else to characterize it. And I, you know, it doesn't, I thought we maybe made a little progress here of them not bringing this up. But again, another question for the mayor. And you know, it'll be on Wednesday. So actually, we're going to get the mayor here before he votes on this. And I'm not sure, again, obviously it'll be probably a 5-0 vote because this is a political issue that is supported by most of all the city commissioners. So again, that's right smack dab in the middle of the agenda. Get everybody in a real happy mood to deal with some of the other issues. The other thing I wanted to bring up is a couple issues, I guess, from the COVID pandemic. One is called a leave buyback option. And I looked at that. It's about $2 million impact. So I thought it'd be worthy to talk about. And it's basically this is the result of people having to work overtime during the COVID era. And it says here that over the last year, the city has faced numerous challenges resulting from the difficulties filling vacant positions, as well as internal staffing limitations as departments continue to deal with the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so it says here, this has resulted in employees having to work overtime to ensure continued service delivery. And in many instances, they have been unable to take planned personal leave. This has resulted in higher than normal leave balances, and by city policy, may be lost at the end of the calendar year. So this is the issue. It's, you know, when you have leave and there's some rules that you got to use it or lose it. The problem here is they've developed so much leave they can't use it in time, and it would be a huge penalty to have them lose it since they were covering it during the COVID pandemic. So again, this is a financial issue, and it's $1.8 million that we're dealing with here. So something that I'm sure that will be passed. The other thing was I wanted to bring up, the last issue was an affordable housing for essential workforce. So during a recent meeting in September, the city commission directed staff to bring an informational item on affordable housing programs available for essential personnel in the local workforce. The COVID-19 pandemic has revealed the critical role certain professions play in the economic viability and welfare of cities. Creating opportunities for essential employees to live near their workplace offers several benefits to workers, employers, and the entire community. So what they're trying to do here is look at affordable housing for people that are in the, firefighters, police officers, possibly teachers, and trying to address the affordable housing issue, which everybody says we have here. A lack of affordable housing, and we're still trying to put our hands around exactly what that means. But if you go, this is an informational item that we'll spend some time looking at. But basically they are, here we've got a definition or examples of essential personnel, and they're talking about teachers, firefighters, police officers, and nurses. And they're looking at their salaries and what, if they can afford anything in the current housing stock. And so, this is, for local government to get involved with this is a slippery slope. I'm not sure, other than giving them money to help it become more affordable. Hopefully you're not going to get into building homes for these essential workers. It'd be better just to give them a voucher if that's something that is approved. But that's going to be, it'll be interesting to hear the discussion on this issue. So, that's a couple of issues that the city commission will be addressing on Wednesday, next Wednesday. And like I said, we will have the mayor in studio on Tuesday, and we'll touch on, see where he falls on some of these some of the issues. But when we get back, we'll pivot to Leon County Schools. They have a meeting on Tuesday. I will touch on a couple of those issues and get you up to date on the federal lawsuit that was filed by a family here in Leon County. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to our last segment here today. A Thursday football game this weekend. I guarantee a victory. For FSU, that is. All right. The federal lawsuit, which I don't think is yet to be covered by any other local media, filed in the Northern District here against Leon County School Board, 63 pages. You can go to Talish Reports and read the lawsuit yourself. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday, and I wanted to just bring it up again here and just give you some, you know, I guess the gist of the lawsuit. And I'll read one phrase from the lawsuit, which was page 23, and they state in the lawsuit that Dr. Rogers, Kathleen Rogers, which is assistant superintendent with the school board, responded to the parents, quote, "We currently do not have any Florida-specific law that obligates us to inform the parents or says we cannot listen to the student without their parent present." So I think that gets at probably the gist of the lawsuit. I think one of the things you're going to find out during a lawsuit like this is other things that are taking place that maybe we didn't know about. We've talked about, you know, some of the things taking place behind the back of the school board, maybe, you know, with them ignoring it on purpose. But, you know, I mean, for example, there's an association that has an equity committee, which the school board member Joey Bowen is on, and they meet every month with Equity Florida, which, again, this is an advocacy group, and I'm not sure why they are selected out to be met with, and I want to get more information on that. But that's also included in this lawsuit. But it's clear about they're going after the rights of parents and how the school system is not acknowledging those rights. But other things that are in here is, for example, if there's a question and answer thing on how to deal with some of these issues. And one of the question and answers about if there's someone complains about the opposite sex being in the bathroom, for example, a male in the female bathroom, that they have to be careful on how they deal with that because they could be discriminating against someone who is identifying as a female. So please understand, here in Leon County, you can identify as a male can identify as a female and has the right to use the female bathroom. Please understand that is the current policy. They can actually play on sports teams. That's the current policy. So, you know, we're not getting a lot of feedback on how often this happens, although I will tell you that over the last 6 months, we've written two stories about parents' rights being basically ignored in two different schools on two different issues. So, and we're getting these stories from tips. So it's not like there's somewhere to go figure out how often this has happened. So anyway, that, you know, this will wind through the court system and we'll keep you up to date on what happens. But I do think that just going through the lawsuit is going to raise more questions about what is going on with the Leon County School Board system. And I would hope that the school board members are going to weigh in on some of these things. So we shall see. All right. Now on the actual agenda for the school board, wanted to just highlight a couple of things. There's items of consent. In other words, this won't be discussed. It'll just be voted on, where they're going to spend about 70 grand on the licensing of this popular renewal of online education called Brain Pop. And the reason why I signal it, this is called, it's under the budgeted category of instructional materials. And the reason I bring this up is because this is part of what we're seeing with the nationalization of local decisions. We're seeing it with the city commission when they're taking positions on board, on abortion, voting right issues, stuff they don't have any control over, but they're just taking positions of it because they want to let everybody know where they stand on these national issues. Well, what's happening with the school system, and we saw this, people are getting their positions integrated into the classroom without going through the school board, and in ways that are a little bit innocuous. So this Brain Pop has been doing these videos, helping teachers with lesson plans. You know, they can just put this Brain Pop video on. But, I mean, they've got about 800,000 videos, and it's a national organization. If you go through and look, they've dealt with the Black Lives Matters issues. They've dealt with LGBTQ plus issues. And so who reviews all these videos? So what happens is you vote to say, yeah, we're going to use this online instructional material. It gets in the classrooms, and then the teachers can do whatever they want. There's no policy set that, look, these are the class materials we want to use. And this is where, as a parent, I get a little bit frustrated because, you know, why do we need all this online material? I know that it can be maybe an added value on some issues, but why can't we just teach? We've got enough technology that why are we allowing other groups that might be influenced by political forces to provide lesson plans or lessons on topics when we can actually, a teacher can actually read a chapter in a textbook and then teach it instead of just putting on this video. It seems to me like that, you know, teachers are taking advantages because they don't really have to plan. And I know I'll probably get yelled at for that. You know, just pop the video on. And then these other groups are obviously getting paid for it, but it's also a way to sneak in a perspective on a specific issue. And so, again, that's on the agenda. That will be voted. No one will say a word about it, and we will move forward. There's also a section in the agenda, and this will be the last issue that we get to, called School Impact Analysis. And real quick, this is where development projects that will result in more kids in the school zone have to be evaluated by the school board as being what kind of impact it would have on the schools in that area. So in other words, if you've got a neighborhood development, which is going to bring 1,000 homes, then you've got to look at what kind of capacity you have in the schools to say, yeah, we can meet the new kids that are going to be moving to the neighborhood. Well, I have never, ever seen any of these impact analyses have a negative impact. There's always no problem, no problem. Well, there is one in this on this agenda, which just makes me think this is a whole useless exercise. So there's a development that's going to be out in Bradfordville behind Childs High School, which is going to have 1,876 total units. And so they go through and calculate the impact, and they have a category down here, and it says, like, the three schools in that area are Killarney Elementary, Deer Lake Middle, and Childs High School. And they're saying that the current present capacity of Killarney Elementary is 268 desks. They've got room for 268 people. But after this development, it says right here that they'll have a negative capacity of 98. And then they say that they approve this as having no negative impact. Well, there's the negative number right there. Now, so you go to Deer Lake. Deer Lake has enough room to facilitate all the students. So that makes sense. But then you get to Childs and you've got another negative number. But again, this is like under a agenda item that will be voted on. And the agenda item says that they do not have negative impacts. And so it says here, will submitter be delivering? Now, let's see real quick if I can get the word. It says that this time we'll discuss the apportionment share mitigation if needed. So anyway, we'll see what happens here. But it says right next to the Bradford Hills PUD, no negative impact to Leon County Schools. And if you look at the actual item, they've got negative numbers everywhere. So I'm not sure the purpose of this item if they're not going to talk about a negative impact when the item says it's negative. Anyway, we'll end today's show with that rant. And we'll see what happens at the school board meeting on Tuesday. Usually there's very little discussion there, but we'll be looking for a couple things. Will the federal lawsuit come up? Any more update on mask, and then we'll look at this school impact analysis. So we'll have plenty to talk about next week. So until then, have a great afternoon and even a better weekend, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.